Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, January 6th, 2020. And as always, Alex Brown is here to help guide the Wiretaps discussion. Alex, Happy New Year to you, and welcome back.
Yeah, Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to everybody listening.
Yeah, so this is the first for 2020, we're really excited, still energized by a lot of the positive feedback we've been getting on the podcast and just all the great discussion happening at clearadmit.com. So this week is, we're kind of, after a couple weeks where things were a little quiet with, you know, the holidays, this is a busy week, I guess you'd say. And do you want to tell our listeners why that might be?
Sure. Well, I'm sure many listeners know, but I mean, we have, I'd say, up to 30 application deadlines this upcoming week. Actually, oddly enough, and I don't really understand this, it started yesterday, Graham. About three or four programs actually use Sunday as an application deadline, which that would never have happened when the years ago that I was working at Wharton, but there we go. But yeah, all the tops, not all the top schools, but the majority of the top schools, you know, have their round two deadlines this upcoming week. So I'm sure candidates are doing a lot of hard work right now.
Yeah, this is a busy time, and we definitely empathize. I know that it's hard to get everything together. There are some resources on the website that are useful for this. So we have, like, you know, the recommendation letter questions are on the site. We have essay topic analyses for every leading school. So if you're proofreading and you want to just check your essays against kind of the advice we give, you can easily do so. So yeah, just keep stay tuned. We know this is a tough time, and, you know, 30 deadlines in a week is crazy. As to the Sunday thing, Alex, I guess that's convenient for the schools, certainly. And I think there's probably some schools who would say it might even be better for applicants, right? They're not in the office, and, you know, it's a chance for them to submit during the calm of a weekend. And so, you know, that's possibly what's going on there. And then that way the admissions officers arrive at their desk and find everything, you know, ready to go in terms of the reading. So, so it's going to be busy though, and we recognize that. And one other thing I wanted to mention is that we did just run the Real Humans for UCLA Anderson. And, you know, that series has been so popular. So obviously, if you're interested in Anderson, take a look at that. There's some great profiles of students there. And, you know, beyond that, as always, Alex has picked out, I think, a couple of ApplyWire entries. So a couple of candidates whose candidacies we can review and give them hopefully advice that comes in the nick of time for their applications. And then one DecisionWire entry that Alex has here that he's pulled out. So we're going to go over all that. In the meantime, Alex, I don't know if you are aware, but we have a new sponsor for the podcast. So we're on a bit of a roll. You know, Bain had been sponsoring the podcast, and we now have a new sponsor, and that is Kellogg. So I didn't know if you're aware of that, but Kellogg's Evening and Weekend MBA program is the new sponsor for the Clear Admit MBA Admissions podcast. And I just wanted to remind everyone that, you know, you can reach your highest career goals while earning an MBA part-time. The Evening and Weekend MBA program at the Kellogg School of Management, which is located at their downtown Chicago campus, actually offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle, match your experience. And the truth is that by graduation, you'll share the exact same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. So visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW to learn more. So we thank Kellogg for their sponsorship. And Alex, why don't we get into the business here of looking at these candidacies? So let's look at Wiretaps candidate number one. So this candidate is applying to Georgetown McDonough, Northwestern Kellogg, NYU Stern, Washington, Washington Foster, UCLA Anderson, USC, and UT Austin. So a long list of schools there. They're hoping to start school in the fall, and they've been working in finance and accounting and are looking to pivot over to tech, specifically kind of a marketing tech role. The companies they're targeting are Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. They have a 710 on the GMAT and a GPA of 3.11, 6 years of work experience, currently located in the USA, in the Bay Area, and they are Canadian. And this person mentioned that they would love a podcast feature. So here you go. We are featuring you on this episode. They've been working in tech but in a kind of finance role, if I understand correctly. So they'd done a couple years at Deloitte and now a couple years with a major tech company, and they want to pivot function basically into marketing. And ideally in the long term, they want to be a C-suite executive for a high growth tech company focused on either healthcare or education. And they asked a few specific questions that I'm hoping you can address, Alex. The first was, do they need to cast a wider net with the school selection or maybe retake the GMAT? They also wanted to know how they go about convincing the admissions team that they want to move into marketing, given that they've had kind of a finance accounting background to date. So those are the main questions, it looks like. So Alex, what's your take here?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think the candidate has a good spread of programs in which they're applying. Well,
maybe too many.
I mean, seven programs is probably slightly above average, but it's within the ballpark. I mean, one concern would be if all seven have application deadlines this week, then that might be quite a hectic juggling act on their part. But I'm not exactly sure if they're all this week, but, you know, they're either this week, next week, or whenever. But the spread is good. I mean, you've got Kellogg at the top end, and we obviously know that Kellogg is super powerful marketing program. But you know, there's a nice spread through to sort of top 20 programs here, I think is very good. And the target companies, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, I mean, in some of these programs, they'll be represented in their career management side. So Washington Foster, for example, comes to mind, that's listed here, and so forth. And we know, you know, programs like McCombs is good for tech marketing, and so forth. So I think they've done a good job of picking, selecting the schools that they're targeting. As you said, their numbers are sort of a little, you know, 710 GMAT is a good GMAT. It's going to be lower than average for the likes of Kellogg at the top of the schools that they're selecting, but it's probably going to be at average or maybe even a little above average to some of the other schools on this list. They suggested they might even retake the GMAT. If they do, clearly it's not going to be available in time for the round two deadlines, but it might still be a useful exercise if they bump up that score and have it available through the interview part of the rounds, and sort of later in the rounds they can send in an additional supplemental score. That won't hurt for sure. The problem, I guess, to be addressed here is the GPA is going to be lower than average, right? So that combination of GMAT GPA is probably the little bit of a concern for this candidate. But there's not much they can do about the GPA at this juncture, I don't think. Their work experience, Graham, I think sounds pretty interesting. Clearly, they're on the accounting and finance side. And we had some conversation about that, whether they're truly adding value and they're looking to shift into marketing to add more value and sort of customer facing and so on and so forth. But you would argue, I think, and you did in the comments, that actually there may be some accounts would argue that they do add value. And then obviously marketing's moving more towards data driven marketing and so on and so forth. So having the background that this candidate has is probably useful for that transition. So I would suggest, Graham, that it's not unusual in my experience to have candidates that are wanting to switch from an accounting sort of auditing type role to a marketing role and using the MBA to enable that transition. Would you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think we see a lot of candidates from, you know, whatever the big four accounting auditing firms heading into, even just into consulting, like strategy consulting, right? So pivoting out of that is not uncommon. What I was suggesting in my comments, you know, to this candidate was that I think their exact comment was something like, my story currently is that accounting doesn't directly add value to the end product or consumer. And that's why I'm trying to go towards a function that adds tangible value. And so I read that and I thought, okay, I absolutely understand what you're saying, but I think they need to pitch their career plan in a way that doesn't throw a whole function under the bus. So I think, you know, the cost accountants and or just the accountants in general, or the purchasers or people in finance at Apple might argue that they are adding some value to the product you hold in your hand in some way. But I just think it's fine. And they might even argue, those numbers people might say, oh, those marketing people, they just draw a pretty picture and come up with a campaign slogan. And, you know, so I think it could go both ways, right? So I just want to make sure that this candidate is just saying how they've learned a lot in finance and accounting, and that they think that that quantitative expertise might be really useful in today's marketing environment, which, as you correctly point out, is increasingly data-driven. So that's all. I think I agree 100% with you that the combo 3-1, 7-10 is going to be challenging for some of the schools on their list, but I do love their work experience. I mean, they've gone from kind of working at Deloitte, where they were doing finance and probably audit, accounting, stuff like that. And then they've moved into, a couple of years now at a major tech company. So I think they have an interesting career trajectory. I love the goals, assuming they can explain them in a compelling way. And the school selection's great. Again, it may be one or two schools too many, but when you have low numbers, sometimes you have to cast a wider net. So I think there's a lot to like here. I think you and I were talking about how if you look at their spread of schools, some of the schools that are, presumably more, lower in the ranks or something, like a U Washington or even Georgetown, are really compelling choices because of the fact that they may want to work at Amazon or Microsoft. You mentioned in your comments here that, Foster's great for proximity to, Seattle and Amazon and Microsoft. I would say Georgetown, given the new Amazon headquarters coming online in the DC area, that makes Georgetown an interesting choice too. So there's a lot of reasons for the spread of schools. I would love it if they'd retake the GMAT, get a 730 plus, and mention that to Kellogg or whoever they're, some of the top schools on their list that they're applying to when they're kind of maybe at the interview phase or have already, the process is underway, but they could still take on board a new test score. And by the way, do you have a sense of like, what's the cutoff there? When you were reading files at Wharton, like, would you take a new test score? I mean, right up until like, is there a limit? I mean, I guess the mid release point, is that what you would think? Or,
I mean, obviously for Kellogg, as we know, you self select to interview and make sure get the application in and get on that roster to interview. But yeah, for the other schools on the list, I think they're all interview by invitation. So to the extent that you can get a new test score in before the interview invitations start rolling out, which is generally going to be about a month after the application deadlines, I would use that as a measure. The reality is, any materials coming in after an application deadline, you cannot guarantee that they will be considered in the review process. That's the risk every candidate runs when they're relying on additional information that comes in after a deadline. So they just have to be aware of that. And I assume candidates are generally aware of that particular risk. The other thing that, the only other thing to look at in this candidate is their long-term goal focus is sort of working high growth tech company focused on healthcare or education. Sort of understanding where that passion or interest has evolved from. So you don't want to just suddenly surprise the ad-com after a long sort of, thing in your goals essay and then just attach at the very end healthcare or education if there's nothing in the background up to that point that suggests that connection. So hopefully it's based on maybe some of the current professional experience the candidate's had or something in their personal story or whatever it might be. So hopefully there's a connection there also.
Yeah, that's a great piece of final advice, because I think it could just sound like they're saying, well, that they want to kind of do good, work in education or healthcare, but yeah, there ideally would be some thread either in their personal, outside activities or in the work experience they've had to date that sort of struck their interest. So very good feedback. But yeah, so I think this candidate, again, good shape, good spread of schools. Numbers are a little low. Maybe they can, boost them and go from there. But I wish them the best of luck. I know they're probably going to be really busy over the next few days. So
yes.
so let's move on and discuss Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry, and this candidate is looking at the Trilogy. And by the Trilogy, we mean Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton. They want to start school in 2020, so they're going to start next fall. They're applying in round two. They've been working in strategy and consulting pre-MBA, and they're hoping to get into entrepreneurship and then venture capital after business school. The GMAT score is 760, GPA of 3.2, and they've been working for 4 years. And if memory serves, it's basically 2 years with Deloitte Strategy Consulting and 2 years with Google in a strategy role there. The other thing I should mention is that this person's had a really tough kind of upbringing. Literally, you know, siblings include like a convicted felon, someone in drug rehab, or pregnant age 16. So a really tough kind of family background. And this person has, you know, pushed to really maximize her potential. She's done a lot of kind of mentoring and volunteer work with underserved females. And she's also, you know, trying to help, just women and underrepresented minorities in general. And in fact, her long-term goal is to set up her own VC and, you know, raise her own fund, basically, and help empower underrepresented minorities and women founders. So really interesting candidate. GPA is a little bit low. I think it's funny, you know, mentioning the trilogy, I realized there was a Star Wars movie that just came out. I don't know if it's any good because I haven't seen it yet. I'm hearing kind of mixed reviews, but it's always a challenge to kind of apply to the trilogy and get into all of them. And I also think it's also interesting that, you know, each of the three schools is really different, despite them all, you know, they're all great schools, but they're all quite different from one another. But we do see candidates, you know, year in and year out targeting all three. So, Alex, what's your take on this candidate?
I absolutely love this candidate. Again, I think from a diversity standpoint, if you want sort of different voices in your classroom, this candidate sort of hits all the markers. I mean, she's come from, and I think we're making an assumption that she's female and an assumption she's underrepresented minority, given her sort of passion for supporting those two groups. So excuse us in our feedback if neither of those points are correct. I would still say I love this candidate, male or female. You know, you mentioned the struggles with the siblings. So clearly coming from a very difficult background and coming very far in this person's journey from that very difficult background, both professionally and personally, and along the way supporting others, i.e. underrepresented minorities and women in various roles. So it's not just that this person's done extremely well from a very tough beginning, but also has sort of recognized the importance of being a role model, a mentor, and various other things for people that may be in some similar sorts of situations. It appears to me that the work experience is very strong, working at Google and so on and so forth. The one sort of slight blemish, I suppose, is a 3.2 GPA, and that clearly is below average for the very, very top schools. The challenge, you know, there will be to explain, and as we talked about before coming on air, you know, she had a challenging curriculum to deal with, an undergrad and grad program. Obviously, the challenge with the sort of the tough background, as well as having to work 20 hours a week to sort of survive and pay for the education. All these are factors that I think she can address briefly in the optional essay. The 760 GMAT is just ridiculously high. So there's going to be no doubt that this person is super smart. So as long as they can portray that they are motivated now to really excel and do well in a very busy curriculum, then they're going to be in great shape, I think. I think a school will be privileged to have this person in their classroom, quite honestly, Graham.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think clearly the candidate is, I mean, first of all, the GMAT score is, you know, pretty much off the charts. It gets into that north of 750, you know, kind of range. You get, it's what we used to call at Wharton, a great big GMAT. So that's helpful. I agree. The GPA, there are two things about the GPA. A, it's a little low. And B, it sounds like it's a downward trend. She mentioned that she had a 3-5 first year, and then things started to go downhill because she was working 20-plus hours a week until graduation to pay for college. I mean, personally, and also I should mention, this was a integrated undergrad and grad program in accounting. So I know that we're pretty harsh on GPAs as a rule, you know, that once it's, you know, down in that kind of 3.0, 3.1, 3.2, we get nervous, when, especially when we're talking about Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, et cetera. But I really think in this case, it's something that's going to be easy enough to overcome because of the rigor of the undergraduate experience and because of the really great GMAT score. And because, as you say, I think most of these schools are going to be really happy to welcome someone into their community who's had this type of experience. And, you know, I didn't even mention it, but it sounds like she actually founded the diversity, equity, and inclusion team at Google. So, I mean, this is just someone who, as you said, really appropriately or very aptly put, not only came from a tough background, but has helped to pull others up along the way. So it's not like, you know, this person kind of came out of a bad background and is only looking out for themselves or something, right?
And that's really what you're looking for in these types of candidates, those that have come from the tough background, but also recognize how they can impact others in a very positive way. And I would be surprised if that's not what this candidate's all about.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the only thing this person needs to be wary of is, you know, probably explain the GPA a little bit and that downward trend. Just a short, you know, direct explanation as she provided to us here. And then I guess I would, sometimes I get a little leery of a candidate who's only applying to the kind of top three, maybe risking a certain level of like cockiness. And I'm not seeing any of that in her writing here, but I just want to make sure that, you know, the application materials are written from a, you know, humble point of view, and that, that she's not sort of taking anything for granted. I think she's a compelling candidate at all three schools, and I don't blame her for targeting the best three. But I think, you know, there are some admissions officers who would look at someone applying only to those three and say, gee, you know, what's, I guess you kind of think you're going to get into one of them and you're not, there's no safety here.
I mean, to be clear, admissions officers reading her candidacy won't know that she's only applying to these three. So it's not like they're sharing information and that kind of stuff.
No, although it gets, yeah, sometimes it's asked in an interview. It can come up, you know, what else are you looking at and why? And,
right.
And so I think if that were to happen, I think she'd have to have a good way to sort of explain the three.
That's less likely to happen at the very top schools, much more likely to happen in sort of schools in the top 16 versus the top three. Because, you know, just like the candidates that are appropriate for the top three schools, the schools themselves feel pretty good about themselves. So they're less worried about whether the, you know, the candidate is going to go somewhere else, right? Their yields tend to be very high. The other thing, I mean, you can imagine the Stanford essay, you know, what means most to you and why, or however it's worded, Graham. I mean, she's got great material for that. She'll have great material for her essays.
Yeah, for sure. So in any event, I think that's enough said here, but again, really appreciate this person sharing her profile, very compelling, and good luck, because it's three schools, all challenging, and all their deadlines are right away here. So best of luck getting those in, and by all means, keep us posted. We always encourage candidates, come back, you know, and post on Decision Wire when you get your results, or even in the Apply Wire thread where we've kind of commented on your candidacy, let us know how things go. So speaking of Decision Wire, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this is a Decision Wire entry. It's from a candidate who has yet to decide where they're going to go, and they've been admitted to IESE in Spain with a $30,000 scholarship, to London Business School, also with 30K, although pounds, and actually the first one is euros, so 30,000 pounds from LBS, Minnesota Carlson with an $80,000 scholarship, UCLA Anderson also coming in with $80,000, and UT Austin McCombs at $30K. They are starting school obviously next fall, and they want to work in technology, and the companies that they're targeting are Amazon, Apple, and Google. They have a 710 on the GMAT, a 3.33 GPA, located in Minneapolis, and they're actually currently on the wait list at Kellogg too, and they've sort of narrowed the field down. So, you know, given all these results, they've already narrowed it down to being between London Business School, with a 30,000 pound scholarship, or Anderson at UCLA with 80K US. So they're having trouble deciding. And your first question to them, Alex, was, where do you want to work post-MBA? Tell us a little more about what did they say and what do you think based on that?
Yeah, I mean, clearly with these options, they have options in Europe and they have options in the United States. So which is the better of these options is going to be driven by where they want to work post-MBA and potentially in the long run. So if they're interest was to be in Europe post-MBA, then you would argue that ESA or London Business School would be a better option than Anderson or McCombs or Carlson, clearly. The argument is the other way around. If their ambition is to be in the United States, then the arguments for Anderson and possibly McCombs or Carlson becomes much stronger versus London Business School or ESA. So that should be quite clear cut. So to try to rank, let's say, London Business School versus Anderson and see which one comes out best, I think is futile, because that presumes that you have no geographic preference at all.
Right. And you and I have a pet peeve with the rankings that actually seek to combine all business schools on earth into a single ranking, just because... Yeah, I think it is challenging to compare LBS to even to, you know, to Kellogg, where this person's on the wait list, or UCLA. It depends where someone wants to be and what they want to do. I mean, as it always does, right? So it's challenging.
Yeah. So their response was, we'll want to come back to the US eventually, thinking about product management, marketing, or strategy for functions. So which does create an interesting sort of wrinkle. Perhaps the candidate wants to get some European experience and then return to the US. And in that, if that's the case, then LBS, ESE would be a more viable option. But in the long run, clearly they want to be in the US, which then favours Anderson at this point, but also would bring into the conversation that they should really push to see if they can get off the wait list at Kellogg. Because obviously then Kellogg becomes the bigger voice or argument on the US side versus the European side. So I guess the reason why I chose this candidate on Decision Wire, Graham, is the answers are just never clear cut and straightforward. And what makes sense for one candidate won't necessarily make sense for the next candidate based on their personal as well as professional goals. So their professional goals might be to work, you know, work in product management, marketing, strategy, whatever, and then progress through to the C-suite. But their personal goals might be to have a European experience, for a couple of years for the MBA as well as a couple of years post-MBA. So when you're talking about the experience, it's the experience in the program geographically, as well as the 2 or 3 or 4 years after the program in that first that first situation. You could make the argument. I think we talked about a Decision Wire candidate that wanted to be in Minnesota long run, and if that was the case for this candidate, then that makes Carlson the more obvious, even though perhaps in rankings terms it wouldn't be listed so as highly.
Or it certainly makes it puts it more in the discussion. I think they were offering him 80,000. I want to, you know, one thing I thought was interesting is just to give you a sense, like, I think you could make the argument either way, and you're, you know, illuminating some of these issues that may come to the person's mind. So for example, you know, you could argue that London Business School is the best MBA program, or certainly one of the, you know, top two or three MBA programs in Europe, or at least that's what the rankings say, you know, year in and year out, right? So kind of best in class program, and they want to go work at Amazon or Apple or Google or something. And so you could say, gee, those three organizations have pretty large operations in London. And when they're looking to hire, LBS is probably the program in the UK that they favor the most, right? Because it's one of the best programs in Europe and maybe the best in the UK overall, right? So so you could say, wow, they could go and work at Google or one of these companies in London doing, they mentioned, product management, marketing, or strategy. So they're not doing you know, coding or kind of tech, you know, very tech work. It's more marketing or strategy type stuff. So they go and do that. And then as an American, getting back to the US on, you know, with their US passport for a job at headquarters maybe isn't so hard, and they get this great 2-year experience in the UK, broaden their horizons, et cetera, right? And I guess you could even argue that, gosh, you know, UCLA, you're fighting against Berkeley grads and Stanford grads and others just in California alone for some of these jobs. So you could make an argument about LBS here, but I think you could also, you know, reverse course and make the same type of argument for UCLA. You're in the backyard of all these tech companies. They all have a large presence in LA or worst case, San Francisco. And, you know, so you can make all the weather's better. I mean, you can make all kinds of arguments for in favor of UCLA.
I guess the weather is better there. I'll concede you that point.
When it's not on fire, I would say. Yeah. Right. So, no, but seriously, it's challenging. I think this is why we picked this, or you picked this candidate, and I agreed that it was a good one to discuss because it's not so obvious, depending on, you know, where you sit. Now, you know, if they're ultimately going to end up in Minneapolis someday, you might say that more people are going to be familiar with UCLA or certainly Kellogg than they would be with London Business School too. So that's a thing to keep in mind. But that's just where they currently sit. I don't know that they ultimately would want to end up there or not.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Hard to say.
At the end of the day, though, obviously, we're not going to prescribe a particular choice here. Hopefully, we've outlined some of the options and some of the thinking behind these types of choices. But I think it would be foolish for the candidate not to pursue the waitlist at Kellogg as they continue to consider their next move. So they can deposit at either Anderson or LBS at this juncture. Once they make that decision, if it's between those two schools, while still vying for a place at Kellogg. And if they get a place at Kellogg, that might certainly put Anderson less favorably in the picture. And it might become a discussion for the candidate between Kellogg and LBS. But I certainly wouldn't dismiss Kellogg until I'd exhausted the wait list at this point.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say is I believe Kellogg's pretty open to supplemental materials. My fear is that the piece of supplemental information they're going to want is a better GMAT score in this case. So that might be something to take into account. But in any event, really interesting Decision Wire entry. And we love seeing your entries on Decision Wire. So if you have decisions from schools, please share. We're trying as a company to make this data available to you in very cool, unique ways that we're working on in the background to help people make these kinds of decisions and to help candidates learn about, you know, just what sort of outcomes people are seeing and how they make those decisions. So again, Alex, thanks for picking out these three Wiretaps profiles for us to look at this week. I do want to wish each and every one of our listeners a very happy, healthy, and successful 2020. May you all receive many acceptance letters to the schools of your dreams in 2020. And yeah, thanks so much for listening. Alex, I guess we'll be back to do this again next week.
Yes, very good. Very good.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks once again. And we'll see you all in 7 days.
Yep. Happy New Year, everybody.